had made her extraordinary reply. Now, Eleanor sat down in her chair and tried to think what she should say next. The old woman snorted. She looked much better than she had the last time Eleanor had seen her. She was still thin and pale, with high cheekbones so sharp they looked ready to cut through the skin, but her eyes were clear and remarkably blue, and her mouth was twisted in a grimace of disdain, not pain.
"I know. I told my daughter to fetch you so you could weep and moan over me, call down moonlight or whatever it is Coralinda claims she can do, but I just said all that so they'd make you come. Never cared much for that silver woman, silver lady, whatever they call her. Never thought too much of Coralinda, if it comes to that. Arrogant and dangerous and more ambitious than anyone realizes. Don't understand why no one can see that."
Eleanor just stared at the old lady, too astonished to speak. Sarah Paulina made another sound that could have been a cough or maybe a chuckle.
"Guess you're not used to hearing anyone say such things about your precious Lestra, are you? Strange little deal she's got set up there. All these people bowing and scraping to her, everyone calling her by some fancy name. It's like she's her own little queen on her own little throne, and she's got everyone there believing it.
Well, what happens when a queen realizes she's not the only royalty in the country, hey? When the king tries to shut her down? Baron's a damn fool. He never should have let Coralinda run on like this for so long. He'll be sorry when she starts her own revolution."
Baron. That was the king's name, Eleanor thought. This mad old woman was saying the king should fear that the Lestra would start some kind of uprising. It was something Eleanor could instantly believe.
"But the Lestra cares only to celebrate the goddess," Eleanor said in a soft voice, dropping her eyes, keeping her face demure. "She sent me here at your request, if you did not want my prayers."
"You're the one who made me well,"
the old woman interrupted, and Eleanor's eyes flew to her face.
"I was so sick I was going to die. No one would say it, but I knew. And then you were here, you and that other girl, and I got well. You're the one who saved me. I could feel the power in you that second night just when you walked in the room."
Eleanor felt a little shaky. This was treacherous ground. Heretic this old woman might be, but her daughter wasn't, and Eleanor was here on convent business.
"I have only the power that the Great Mother chooses to lend me," she said, still softly, the words deliberately ambiguous.
The Saramara snorted again.
"Call it a gift from the Pale Mother if you like, but you're a skilled healer, girl. And I've got a damn lot of pain in my leg, and I don't like it. I want to be well. I want to be up and able to walk out of this room, and I don't want to hurt. I'm tired of hurting. You have no idea how long it's been since I've been free of pain."
Eleanor's sympathy was quickly roused at the slight break in the old woman's voice, and she studied her patient for a moment. Paulina was watching her, the blue eyes intense, the thin mouth drawn tight. Eleanor thought that, for all her scornful words, the old woman actually was a little afraid. That Eleanor did not possess the power, she thought, or would not use it.
"It would seem very odd," she said carefully, "for your leg to be healed overnight, for you to get up tomorrow morning whole. Your daughter and your physician, everyone, would think it was strange and troubling."
Paulina sat back against the headboard, still regarding Eleanor. Her eyes were even brighter.
"If you healed me," she said, "I'd stay in bed another 2 weeks. I'd pretend to be in pain. I would. I would make sure you'd been gone for days before I started to remark how much better my leg was."
"People still might wonder."
An unholy smile came to the old lady's lips.
"Well, credit the doctor. He's fool enough to believe he can work miracles. Think of the patients who'll be begging him to come to their bedsides then."
"Think of the people who might call him a mystic," Eleanor said bluntly.
That made the old lady pause. Some of the excitement left her face.
"That's a word that'll get you stoned to death in Neft," she admitted.
Her bright gaze fixed itself on Eleanor's face.
"Is that what you are? A mystic?"
Eleanor shook her head, genuinely surprised.
"Oh, no, I don't know anything about magic. I don't have any power of my own. It's just that the Great Mother chooses, now and then, to pour her strength through my body so I can help the sick and wounded."
"The Silver Lady is not much of one for healing, not that I ever heard," scoffed the Saramara.
"I call on the Black Mother," Eleanor said in a low voice. "She's the one who watches over the Lyran folk."
Now Paulina looked deeply interested.
"You're a Lyran girl, are you? What brought you across the Lyrith Mountains, and to Luminan Convent, of all places?"
Eleanor smiled.
"Oh, I had many reasons, and I am happy to be at the convent. I admire the Lestra greatly, and I am learning to love the Silver Lady, though she is so different from the goddess I know."
"She's elegant and spiteful, if she's anything like the woman who worships her," Paulina said dryly. "But we won't quarrel about Coralinda. Indeed, I should be thanking her right now for agreeing to send you to me. That is, you have not said, if you are willing..."
Eleanor smiled and hitched her chair closer.
"Indeed, if you will promise some discretion, I am willing," she said. "Let me get close enough to lay my hands on your leg. I will ask the Great Mother to mend you in the shortest possible time."
A couple of hours later, back in the bedroom she had shared with Astira, Eleanor found herself unable to sleep. She had placed her hot hands on Paulina's legs and felt the bones and tissues re-knit beneath her fingers. She had secured the old woman's promise to sleep now and to lie abed a good while longer, and she was pretty sure Paulina would keep the promise, because she did not want to jeopardize Eleanor. But it was still a risky move, summoning the Black Mother in a household such as this, when someone else was awake and watching. Eleanor could not be sorry, but she could not be entirely easy either. Unable to sleep, she knelt on the floor before the window and gazed past her candle at the limitless night sky. The waxing moon was remote and a little offended. She seemed to turn her glowing face deliberately away from the supplicant at the window. But the Black Mother was expansive and comforting, spreading her hands over the sleeping city, the slumbering land, holding everyone close and safe. She approved of Eleanor's actions. She had answered at the very first call. Eleanor crossed her arms on the windowsill and rested her chin on her wrists, watching the scene below. Like Paulina's, this bedroom overlooked the front of the house, the sweep of lawn, the wrought iron gate, the street beyond. It was late, past midnight, she guessed, and almost no one was abroad. Eleanor could see moths congregating near the glass, anxious to get to the candle. Occasional shapes made distinctive patterns against the sky. Spiky bats, feathered owls. Something crept across the lawn below, some small nocturnal creature looking for scraps or vermin. A shadow moved slowly up the hill, big enough to be a man on foot. Someone coming home late from an evening of pleasure, she thought with some envy. A man who had toasted his friends at the tavern or lain with his sweetheart in secret inside her father's house. He slowed as he crested the hill, came to a stop as he turned to appraise the Giseltes house. He wrapped his hands around two of the wrought iron bars and stood there a long moment, gazing up at the windows. It was Justin. Chapter 11. Not even pausing to ask herself what Justin might be doing at the Giseltes mansion at this hour of the night, Eleanor gave a little squeal and pushed open the window. She waved both her arms, still clad in her white novice robes, hoping to catch his attention, since she didn't dare raise her voice to call him. For a moment, he didn't see her. She could tell the exact instant that he did. His head jerked up, and his smile swept across his face, utterly transforming it. He waved back. For a moment, they grinned at each other like fools across the whole distance of the lawn. Eleanor and this young stable hand about whom she knew nothing at all. Then he stepped back and made a motion with his hand, first pointing at the house, then sweeping his arm down toward the street. "Can you come outside?" he seemed to be asking. "Can you join me here?" Of course she shouldn't. For so many reasons, she could hardly list them all if she took the rest of the night to try. Of course she wanted to. She leaned farther out, held up a single finger. 1 minute. Then she ducked back into the room, pulling her shoes off, checking to make sure her hair was tied back. There was no question that she could move through the sleeping house in complete silence. The children of the Black Mother were utterly at ease in the dark, skilled at stealth, adept at crossing unfriendly territory without drawing attention. Torin was proud of his ability to turn almost invisible, a talent he used when hunting game or engaging in feuds with hostile Sabata. He had taught Eleanor to glide soundlessly through any terrain, wrapped in the Dark Watcher's cloak. She negotiated the stairs without a sound, tiptoed past the single footman dozing in the hall, let herself out of the door without any noise at all. Then she flew across the yard and slipped out the front gate, laughing. She was so delighted at this unexpected rendezvous that she wanted to throw her arms around Justin's neck for the sheer joy of it. She didn't, but she did allow him to take her hands in a warm clasp as he peered down at her. It was unlikely he could see in the dark as well as she could, but he had sharp eyes even so, for she could see the changing expression on his face as he looked her over and assessed her mood and well-being. He was probably used to night maneuvers himself, she thought. He was not someone who was afraid of events that unfolded in the dark. "What are you doing here?" he asked in a low voice. She gave a light laugh. She felt ridiculously happy. "The old woman I met last time I was here, she hurt herself and asked for me to come nurse her. I just arrived tonight. This morning when I woke up, I had no idea where I would be by moonrise. But what are you doing here?" He grinned. "Looking for you, of course. Thinking how much I enjoyed meeting you, and wishing you would come back, and wondering if I'd ever run into you again." He shook his head. "I never expected to see you at the window." "Have you walked by every night since I've been gone?" He looked a little self-conscious. "Not every night. Every day, though, probably, at one time or another." "The rest of your life must be very dull," she said. He gave a rather hollow laugh. The expression on his face made her think he was reviewing some recent incident that had been anything but boring. But before he could comment on that, she shifted position as she pulled away from him, and he glanced down at her feet.
"Where are your shoes?" he exclaimed, still keeping his voice quiet. "You shouldn't be walking out here barefoot, in the dirt and the horse droppings and the cold." She laughed.
"This isn't cold. What kind of pathetic winters are you used to wherever you come from?"
He grinned, but still looked concerned.
"Gosen Hall, and it gets plenty cold there," he said. "But you can't stand here barefoot. Let's sit down, and you can wrap your feet up."
Wrap them in what? She wondered. But that was quickly solved. He drew her to the side of the road where a strip of grass looked inviting, even in the dark, and they dropped down and made themselves comfortable. Then he stripped off his overshirt and proceeded to bundle it around her feet. Laughing, she tried to pull away.
"Justin, don't put your clothes on my dirty toes."
But he dragged her knees across his lap and held them there with one hand, his other hand, around her ankles. The set of his face was intractable. She was both touched and a little annoyed.
"You remind me of my brother so much," she informed him.
"I don't think your brothers would allow you to wander around barefoot in the cold at night."
"Well, there you're wrong. Who do you think taught me to do it?"
He just looked at her. and that made her laugh again. She put her arms behind her to brace herself. It actually felt rather nice to have his hands touching her, impersonally enough, through the layer of clothing, but warm for all that. It was a novel sensation to be fussed over by a man and not resent it highly, rather to find it flattering.
"My brothers are night hunters," she informed him. "They can move through the dark as easily as most people can move through the light. We used to play games when we were children, hiding from each other or sneaking past a pretend campsite. When the whole family was together, dozens of children, all about the same age, we would stage these very complex feuds where we would have to attack each other under cover of night. No one ever caught Torin, and I think Hayden only was taken captive 2 or 3 times. I wasn't as good as they were, but I can make my way through the dark. And to sneak out of a house at night," she summed up, "you have to take off your shoes."
"You must be really close to your brothers."
"To my cousins, too. To all of them. The way I grew up, nothing was more important than family. If someone needed something from you, an aunt's second husband's son by a former marriage, you gave it to him. You never turned your back on a family member, which meant no one ever turned his back on you. If I needed something even now, I would just have to raise my hand." She lifted one arm, held it before her a moment, then put it behind her again to take her weight. "And brothers and cousins and uncles would be at my door."
"Sounds wonderful."
"Wonderful and oppressive," she agreed. "Sometimes you don't always want quite that much attention."
"Really? I like the idea of raising a hand and having a whole contingent of brothers at my back."
She studied his face in the dark. He had strong features, quick to show a smile or a sneer, but otherwise fairly watchful, not giving much away, not instinctively formed for trust.
"And you've never had that?" she asked softly.
He considered.
"I have that now, in a manner of speaking. I have friends who would come if I called, no matter why I called them or where I was. People who would not abandon me. I miss them."
Her voice was so soft it was scarcely louder than a breath.
"Did someone abandon you, Justin? Did your family?"
He looked at her, maybe trying to read her face the way she had read his. She wondered how much he would tell her, this man who clearly was not made for sharing secrets.
"I never really had a family," he said.
3 sisters, you told me."
A quick smile, instantly gone.
"So you remember that?"
"Well, of course I do."
"They weren't around very long."
She sat up, drawing her feet back toward her body so she could sit cross-legged beside him. As she made no move to uncover her feet, Justin allowed her to pull away.
"What happened to them? What happened to you?"
He spoke with absolutely no inflection in his voice.
"My mother was a whore in Gosenhall. 4 children by 4 nameless fathers. I was the youngest, and all my sisters were gone by the time my mother died. I was 10. He shrugged. "A long time ago, it seems."
Eleanor felt like she had been dropped in fire. Her skin was melting. Her heart was ablaze. Her eyes had been scalded. No, that came from the sudden tears.
"Justin, how did... But that is... You are..."
"Not a pretty tale," he said, and his voice was gentle. "I don't tell it to get your sympathy, just so you know how different my own life has been."
"But then... What happened to you? How did you survive?"
"Oh, for a while I lived on the street." Another swift smile, this one a little devilish. "Where I learned some of my skill at fighting. I bet I could show your brothers a trick or two I learned during those days. Then I had some luck, met some people who took me in and trained me in a profession. Now I'm a soldier, and a good one. I don't have family, but I have friends. Friends who won't fail me.
Friends you miss. You already said that, Eleanor replied. So why are you here now and not with them? They didn't turn against you, did they? He hesitated for a long time, and she knew he was trying to decide how to answer her question without lying. She was intrigued, both by the thought that he felt he had to lie and the realization that he wanted to give her the truth.
They didn't turn against me, he said at last. They know I'm here. They'll come for me in a while. Which was the least helpful reply he could have given. She leaned forward, her elbows on her knees.
You have secrets, don't you, Justin? She said softly. You're in Neft for reasons you don't want to reveal.
He looked at her silently in the dark, weighing his answer, weighing her.
Everybody has secrets, he said at last.
She swayed even closer, put a hand on his arm, as if she could, through touch, discern the true composition of the man.
You're not a bad man, Justin, are you? She whispered. You aren't cruel. You aren't here to bring anyone to harm.
Almost unconsciously, it seemed, he lifted his own hand to cover hers.
No, he said instantly, and with such conviction that she believed him. That I can swear to you, Eleanor. I never lift my sword except in defense. I have my cause, but it's virtuous. I believe that with all my heart. I am never violent just for the sake of violence, or for personal gain. I am... You can... Don't be afraid of me.
I'm not. Oh, Justin, I'm not afraid. I wanted to hear you say it.
I wish I could tell you my secrets, but they're not mine, he said. Or at least the biggest one isn't, and it affects all the other little ones.
She was almost laughing now. She realized she was still touching him, so she casually withdrew her hand and folded it in her lap.
I have secrets too, she offered. Big ones, and I can't tell them either.
His face assumed a mock sternness.
And are you cruel? Will these secrets bring anyone else to harm?
To her surprise, and clearly his consternation, her face suddenly crumpled with tears. He reached out for her, his eyes wide with concern, but she waved his hands away and drew her legs up to make a sort of barrier between them. Then she rested her cheek against her updrawn knees until she had composed herself again. Justin didn't move, didn't ask questions, but she had the feeling he would prevent her if she tried to simply get up and run back to the house. Not because he was so curious to uncover the truth about her, but because he thought her tears meant she was deeply afraid, trapped, and endangered, and he was the sort of man who liked to confront danger and defeat it.
I'm sorry, she said after a moment, and lifted her face.
She still kept her knees pulled up, her hands wrapped around her ankles.
That was stupid. I didn't think I would start crying.
You're afraid of something, he said flatly. The Lestra?
I'm a little afraid of the Lestra, but that's not it, she said. I was... Oh, Justin, don't hate me. I was thinking... that my secret is I shouldn't be friends with you.
Something flickered across his face and was quickly hidden.
You're married? I didn't think they allowed wives into the convent.
No, of course I'm not married. It's just that my brothers, my family...
How to tell this without giving it all away? And what did it matter if he knew she was from the Lirans? But she didn't want him to know, somehow. Didn't want him to have all the pieces. She did not have all the pieces about him, after all.
The men of my family are very protective, and they don't like to see their women spending time with other men, men that aren't approved by the family, I mean. They would...
You would... If Torin saw me talking to you tonight, he... Well, he... There would be a fight.
Now Justin was wearing his most sardonic smile.
I think I can handle myself in a fight.
She took a deep breath.
Yes, I'm sure you can. But I think... I feel that I... It's not right that I'm sitting here talking to you and putting you at risk, and you don't even know you're in danger. I shouldn't be talking to you at all, and I know that. So it's unkind of me to keep this secret. That's what I was thinking.
I think you shouldn't worry about me, Justin said.
I think you have no idea how angry my brothers can get.
If I say I'm not afraid, will you keep seeing me? He asked.
I shouldn't.
But you want to.
She was silent a moment. He waited. He wasn't patient so much as stubborn, she thought. If silence didn't produce the answer, she thought he might try other methods.
I want to, she said at last. I've never had a friend who was outside the circle of my family, someone who thought so differently from the people I know. It's so intoxicating. No wonder I was thinking about you all last week. But I know that it's a risky friendship, and I know it can't continue, even if your secrets weren't so great that they'd probably keep us apart anyway. I know that I should just go inside right now and not even look out my window again.
She gazed at him a moment, thinking how quickly she had come to like him, how sad she would be if she never saw his face again.
But I don't want to.
He was silent for a beat. Then he said, in a carefully neutral voice,
So you were thinking about me all last week?
It was not what she had expected him to say, and she was surprised into a laugh.
I was, but only because you're such a novel experience. Don't get all conceited.
He bowed his head as if rebuked.
I'll try not to think too highly of myself. I'll try to keep in mind that you would find any stranger equally fascinating.
See, that's the sort of thing that would send Torin into a frenzy, she scolded. He can't stand the idea that someone would flirt with his only sister.
Justin laughed, and Eleanor bristled a little. She said,
Why is that funny?
I didn't even realize we were flirting.
His face was full of mirth.
I don't know enough about women to realize when it's just a conversation and when it's...
He made a motion with his hand. When it's something more. Eleanor was flustered. Sweet mother, had she assumed too much? Had there not been that undertone of romance in some of the things they said? Had she just been so caught up in the dark appeal of doomed lovers that she believed Justin felt the same sparks and energies?
Oh, well, I mean, certainly you, and of course... Friends is what I want us to be, all we can be.
He stopped her with a hand on her arm. She didn't think she touched her cousins or her brothers in a whole day as often as she and Justin had touched each other in an hour.
I thought of you all last week, too, he said quietly. I haven't known that many women, and I don't know how a man is supposed to treat them. I have a friend. And he's in love with a woman, and he is so good to her that she knows she is safe and cherished, no matter where she goes in the world. If I was in love with someone, that's how I'd want her to feel when she was with me. But I don't know anything about falling in love or the steps people take to get there. I thought we were friends, too. Maybe that's how it starts. Maybe only some people go on from there. But I think that's where we are.
She smiled at him, feeling her eyes mist up again.
I think that's where we are too, Justin, she said. But I'm glad we're that far.
How long will you be in Neft this visit?
I don't know. About a week, I think. The Lestra didn't really want me to come, but she wanted to please Janetta Gieseltes. I don't think she'll want me gone too long.
Will I be able to see you again?
I hope so. She said swiftly. and they both laughed.
"I can come back tomorrow night, about this time, if you can get free." She nodded.
"That shouldn't be a problem. Most everyone else is asleep."
He lifted an eyebrow.
"Most everyone else? You snuck out of a house where someone was on watch?"
"Just a footman, and he was half asleep."
"Like to see you running an ambush," he commented.
"My days of playing pretend war games with my brothers are long over."
His expression said, "I wasn't talking about pretend games," but he didn't pronounce the words aloud. For a moment, her heart misgave her. Who was this man she was admitting so blithely into her life? No, that she was running after in a headlong fashion, demanding to be admitted into his. She knew nothing about him, except that he was dangerous and had a story he refused to tell, and that he was funny and kind and impatient and thoughtful and stubborn and, at the oddest moments, vulnerable, and that she was about to walk away from him right now, and already she missed the sight of his smile, the casual touch of his hand. He had decided to say something else.
"If you can get free during the day instead, I'll most likely be at the stables," he said. "Do you remember how to get there?"
"I think so," she said cautiously.
He grunted. "I'll make a map for you. I'll bring it back tomorrow and leave it." He looked around. "By that fence post. I'll dig a little hole. You'll know it by the fresh dirt."
She could feel her eyes light up with excitement and intrigue.
"All right. But I don't know what they'll have me doing during the day. I'm supposed to be nursing Sarah Paulina, who doesn't need that much nursing," she added.
"And then I'll be back tomorrow night, around this time."
"Or I could come to you at the stables tomorrow night, if you've left me a map."
He looked at her as if she was crazy.
"At night? By yourself?"
"I told you I can practically see in the dark."
"I think you must not be remembering what happened to you last time you were wandering around Neft on your own."
"But there's nobody out at night. Look, we're the only two people on the street."
"Believe me, there are people out in some of the districts you'd be crossing through, and you don't want to come across them while you're alone, night or day."
He studied her in the dark. "Promise me you won't try it, or I won't leave the map."
"You're as bad as Torrin," she said.
"Maybe." He just waited.
"Oh, fine. I won't try to come alone at night."
"Good. Then I'll see you tomorrow, one way or the other."
She pushed herself to her feet, and he rose nimbly at the same time.
"Something to look forward to," she said with a smile.
Her feet were tangled in his shirt. She rested a hand against his shoulder as she unwrapped herself and handed back his clothing.
"You'd better wash that before wearing it again."
"Bring your shoes with you tomorrow night," he ordered, "unless you want me to get all my shirts dirty."
"You're very bossy," he shrugged.
"Never thought of it that way. I'm practical."
"You're extreme."
"Sometimes." She shook her head.
"I'll bring my shoes. Justin, it was so good to see you."
"Tomorrow, then, Eleanor."
It could have been awkward, for it almost seemed as if she should hug him goodbye. Instead, she smiled, gave him a little wave, and hurried back through the gate, through the door, past the drowsing footman, silently up the stairs, into her own room. Across the floor, so she could gaze out the window. Yes. As she'd expected, Justin was still there in the street, waiting to make sure she'd safely navigated the non-existent hazards of the house. She waved again. He lifted a hand in a brief salute, then turned and headed back down the hill. She watched him till he was out of sight.
Chapter 12.
Most unexpectedly, it turned out that Sarah Paulina had a soft spot for forbidden romance. Eleanor had, understandably, slept late and found herself encountering Janetta Gieseltes's frown when she checked the sick room at noon the next day.
"You're supposed to be here nursing my mother, and yet you sleep the whole morning away?"
the noblewoman exclaimed.
"A girl from the kitchens would do as well, and so I will tell Coralinda. Why we had to send all the way to the convent for such sloppy work—"
"Oh, hush, Janetta. This young woman has been a great help to me,"
Paulina interrupted.
"She was in my room till nearly dawn after traveling half the day to get to my side. I think she deserves an extra hour of sleep in the morning."
Janetta looked even more furious at being scolded in front of a virtual stranger. Her cheeks were red with rage, or embarrassment, as she glanced at her mother.
"You said you were still in pain this morning," she said stiffly. "I imagine I will be in pain for a great many more days," Paulina said tartly. "But I'm better. I told you that the minute you came in. All due to this girl and her kindness."
Eleanor judged it time to speak up. She assumed a most contrite expression and dropped a small curtsy in Janetta's direction.
"I'm sorry. I got to bed very late. The Saramara assured me servants would be in this morning. I could sleep in the room with her, so that she would never be alone. I would be happy to do that if—"
"Mercy, no," Paulina cried. "It's bad enough I have to have people hovering over me at all hours, helping me with the most intimate things. Can't I sleep in private at least?"
"Truly, I did not mean to abandon her," Eleanor said humbly.
Janetta was a little mollified.
"I suppose I can see why you might be so tired after a day like you had. It's just that I hate to think of my mother suffering."
"Oh, no," Eleanor said earnestly. "I will do everything I can to help her."
There was then a brief consultation about how Sarah Paulina was feeling, what Eleanor might do to aid her this afternoon, and what duties Janetta had that would keep her from her mother's sick room the rest of the day. Finally, Janetta left, and Eleanor and the old woman were left alone together.
"And are you really still in pain?" Eleanor demanded.
"No! In fact, I feel amazingly good, strong enough to tear these splints off and go dancing down the hall."
"You promised you wouldn't do that," Eleanor said.
"I won't. I wouldn't want you to get in trouble."
"Well, and you could get in trouble, too. Just because your leg is feeling better doesn't mean the bone is truly healed. It will take some time to regain its full strength and be able to bear your weight. And as for dancing, I think it will be a while before you should attempt anything so energetic."
"It has been a while since I have attempted to dance, but I am thinking now I should give it a try," Paulina said.
Her voice sounded amused. She was watching as Eleanor eyed the remains of her breakfast tray, still laden with fruit and pastries.
"Are you hungry? Eat whatever you like."
"I'm famished," Eleanor admitted, picking up a flaky roll and devouring it. As soon as she'd swallowed, she added, "I didn't stop in the dining hall to get a meal, and just as well, or think how late I'd have been then."
"Still, I do wonder," the old woman said in an innocent voice. "What kept you abed so long this morning?
It was midnight when you left my room, and you couldn't get up till noon?"
Eleanor had not thought to prepare an excuse, and for a moment her mind was empty. She had picked up an apple, and now she just held it in her palm.
"I was... well... the trip was long, and I was more tired than I thought I'd be."
Paulina was watching her, the blue eyes bright with curiosity.
"Tell me, Eleanor, do you have a lover in Neft? Did you sneak out to be with him last night?"
Eleanor had taken a bite of fruit, and now she almost spit it out.
A lover?"
she exclaimed, when she was done coughing with mortification.
"Sarah Paulina!"
The Saramara waved a hand.
"Oh, perhaps someone you have not actually taken to your bed," she said with the unconcern of the very old and the not easily shocked. "A boy you fancy. Someone who makes your heart race and your dreams turn dizzy?"
That describes Justin well enough, Eleanor thought. She said, "Novices at the convent are discouraged from forming attachments to young men."
Paulina snorted.
Yes, and all young women are encouraged to be demure. But how many wayward girls do you know? I've come across plenty in my day. I was just wondering how to account for your time. I could help you if you like.
Eleanor gave her a swift, hopeful look, and the old lady burst out laughing.
Whoa, so there is somebody, isn't there? I thought there was.
I met this man only once before, Eleanor told her. Half of her wanted to keep the secret, half of her wanted to spill the tale, share some of her excitement and fear. She was being recklessly honest with this old woman on so many topics. She would be in dire trouble if the Saramara decided to repeat a word.
He seemed... I like him so much. I didn't know if I would ever get a chance to see him again.
He's here in Neft?
Paulina asked. Eleanor nodded.
That shouldn't be too hard. I have errands I will insist that only you can run. Janetta will think it improper, but she won't mind if you don't squawk about it. Her own servants have their hands full keeping up with her orders.
I would be happy to run errands for you, Sarah.
Well, give me a few moments. I'll think of something I'm dying to have. And here, eat the rest of this bread. Now, what do I want?
A few hours later, Eleanor was once again braving the streets of Neft all by herself, feeling the same illicit thrill she had the first time. Actually, this time, an even greater level of excitement was mounting inside her chest, leaving her both tense and smiling. She clutched Justin's map in one hand and consulted it at every crossroads. He had drawn it with painstaking detail, sketching in recognizable buildings and particularly visible plots of vegetation. He must have worked on it last night and returned to the Gieseltes house before dawn to put it in place. He must have hoped to see her again. Still, she felt the pressure building up around her heart as she approached the stables where he worked. How did you talk to a man coolly by daylight once you had gazed on him by starlight? How would he seem different? How would she? She hesitated a moment, then pushed open the wide door and went in. Instantly, she was surrounded by the rich smell of horse and hay. From the direction of the stalls, she could hear the sounds of animals shifting, snorting, and nervously pawing at the ground. No one was in the front area, where new arrivals were received. She took a deep breath.
Justin?
She called, and pushed through the connecting double doors. A few broad, curious faces swung over the gates to investigate her, the big liquid eyes looking wise and kind. She knew better, though. Horses could be skittish and stupid, though she had a fondness for the ones she regularly rode back home. She patted a few noses as she moved down the row of stalls toward a back door open to a small corral.
Justin?
He came striding through the door, a bucket of water in each hand, and almost dropped them both as he saw her.
Eleanor!
He exclaimed, setting down his burdens and hurrying up to place his hands on both her shoulders. His eyes had not yet made the transition from sunlight to shadowy interior. He bent down to examine her, as if she was hard to see.
Is something wrong?
No, nothing. My patient sent me out to run some errands and made it clear I didn't have to hurry back, so I thought... I'm probably interrupting you. I'm sure you have work to do.
Always work to do at a place like this, he said with a grin. But give me a few minutes and I'll take a break. Sit here and talk to me while I water the horses.
Obediently, she dropped onto a rough bench in the middle of the aisle.
I don't suppose you have any food, she said. I ate off of Sarah Paulina's breakfast plate, but I missed lunch.
He was emptying the bucket into a trough, but he glanced back at her.
We could go to the Golden Boar for something to eat, he said. There's even a restaurant that's a little nicer, though nothing like the places you'd find in Gosenhall. I've got plenty of money if you don't.
I passed some of those places the other day, she exclaimed. People just go there to eat food that someone else made for them?
He laughed.
"What part of the world do you live in that there aren't taverns and restaurants?" he asked. When she didn't answer, he just went on, as if there had been no break in the conversation. Not sure what the Lestro would think about that, though, one of her novices dining out in public with a strange man.
Not to mention my brothers.
They're farther away, and anyway, here in Neft, no one has to know who you are to realize what you are. Everyone knows the novice's robes.
Eleanor glanced down at her white skirt, feeling mutinous and resentful. He was right. Anyone would recognize her, and no one would think it was appropriate for a daughter of the Pale Mother to be consorting with a stable hand in a public place.
"I don't have any other clothes with me," she said in a brooding voice. "Even back at the convent, I only have the clothes I wore when I made the journey here."
Justin hunkered down next to her, shaking his sandy hair back from his face. He was grinning, and his brown eyes were full of mischief.
"Well, I don't think you'd fit in my clothes, but Dell's, man who owns the stables, he's pretty small. There's an old shirt of his in here, a pair of pants. You'd have to belt them up tight, but..."
She stared at him a minute, unable to believe her ears. Dress up like a man? To go out dining in public? Shaming herself, her sabbata, and her religious order? He had to be joking.
"Nobody would do such a thing," she said faintly.
Again, that touch of deviltry in his smile.
"I know some women who would. Your brothers wouldn't like it, though."
"No, I suppose they wouldn't."
He immediately looked repentant.
"Sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. I can go fetch us something to eat and bring it back."
"You were serious? Not just teasing me?"
"A little teasing, a little serious, but I don't want you to..."
"How would we do it? What about my hair? Do you really think anybody would be fooled?"
He tilted his head back, assessing her. She thought he was trying to gauge if she was angry, if she was feeling reckless, if she would later regret any rash action embarked on now. Eleanor herself was flushed with exhilaration, sparkling with rebellion. She couldn't believe it, couldn't believe she was considering such a thing, couldn't believe how much she wanted to do it. What an adventure in a life that had held so little. Justin had no idea how flattered she was, that he would even make her the offer, believe that she had the nerve and desire to carry off such a wild masquerade, would be willing to make her a partner in such a lark, would give her the chance to take such a risk.
"Got a cap I wear on cold days. You could shove your hair up under that. You're so small and your skin's so smooth. Everyone will think you're my little brother. Just don't say much. Oh, and let me see your shoes."
She lifted the hem of her robe, plain and sturdy boots, good for walking. She'd worn them for the trip in from the convent and forgotten to bring any others. Justin nodded.
"Those'll do. Let's get you changed."
He stood, then hesitated a moment, looking down at her.
"Only if you want to. Don't let me talk you into something that's going to make you hate me later."
She rose, the motion almost turning her dizzy. Or maybe it was the emotion, the excitement, the blissful terror.
"I won't hate you. Now I have to do it or I'll hate myself forever for the missed chance."
In 15 minutes, she was transformed. Dell's clothes were too big on her, but they helped hide her figure and left her looking, or so Justin said, like an underfed urchin. She had to rely on his assurance that she could pass for a boy, since there was no mirror here for her to check. Still, she had trusted him this far. Accepting his assurance on this point was a minor act of faith. The knit cap fit rather sloppily over her coiled braids, and Justin adjusted it so it covered her ears, tucking a strand of hair back in place.
"You look like you're about 12, he said. "Just keep that wide-eyed expression on your face and everyone will think this is your first time in from the country."
"It may as well be," she retorted.
"And don't talk too much, at least to anyone but me. I'll order for us. What do you like to eat?"
"What are my choices?"
They discussed possible menu items during a short walk to the Golden Boar, a tap room where, Justin said, her somewhat disreputable appearance was less likely to be noticed than it might be in a more formal establishment. It was some time past the usual lunch hour, so company was sparse, and they got a table to themselves in a corner of the room. Justin sat with his back to the wall, but she only had to turn her head a little and she could survey the whole scene. The individual tables, some still littered with dirty plates and glasses, the wide, smooth bar near the front entrance, lined with high stools on one side and kegs of ale on the other, the men, gathered in twos and threes at various points in the room, eating in silence or arguing in idle voices. Two women were there, with men who seemed to be their husbands. A pretty girl about Eleanor's age approached their table and gave them a tired smile.
"Eating or drinking?" she asked.
"Eating," Justin said. "What's available?"
Within another 15 minutes, they were both happily consuming a hearty meal of soup, bread, potatoes, and roasted vegetables that was much better than convent fare, though not nearly as good as feast food at a Lyran household. Eleanor didn't care. She had been starving ever since drawing on the Great Mother's power to heal Paulina's leg last night. She didn't think she could ever fill the cavern of her stomach.
"Don't know how someone as little as you can take in so much food," Justin observed.
"Am I being vulgar? It's just that I missed breakfast and lunch, and we had cold rations on the road last night."
"I'm hungry, too," he said, cutting himself another slice of bread.
"I love it here," she told him, so earnestly that he started laughing. "I do. We just ask for more food and she brings it, and we don't have to do any of the work. We don't have to wring the chicken's neck or pluck the feathers or roll the dough or chop the vegetables. Oh, and we don't have to scour the pans afterward or haul water up to soak the dishes." "Stop laughing," she said, but she was smiling too. "You don't know how much work it takes to prepare a meal."
"Oh, yes, I do. I've cooked plenty when I was traveling. Hunted my own game, too, and dressed it. I'd wager that's as hard as picking a chicken out of a coop or separating a cow from a herd for slaughter."
"Do you travel a lot?"
"Goes in cycles. Sometimes, yes, weeks at a stretch. Other times, I sit at home for months."
"Which do you prefer?"
He shrugged. "I don't like to sit still. If I'm at home, I'm up and doing something, practicing blade work or prowling the city. So the traveling's good, because it keeps me occupied."
"Gives you a way to focus your energy."
He nodded. "How about you?" She shook her head.
"Oh, I think I'd like to travel a while, see everything there is to see, and then go home again. I think my heart is made for contentment, and that I'm happiest with familiar things around me. But not just yet. Lately, right now, I've been so restless. I felt so confined. I want to see everything. Gillengaria first, and then, who knows, Arborhearst, Carandine, all the lands beyond the ocean. Then I think I'd want to wander home."
"Maybe home wouldn't look so good then."
"Maybe not. Maybe I'd want to stay someplace else that I'd found along the way. But I'm pretty sure I'm the type to settle once I've found the place I like the most."
She took another bite of bread. She was starting to feel almost full.
"So where have you been? What places did you like best?"
"Gosenhall's where I've spent most of my life, and I tend to like cities, especially the ones around the Marlord's estates. Helven Hall, Rappin Manor, Coravan Keep. More going on there. A lot more energy. Rappin Manor's a fortress. So's Coravan Keep, when it comes to that."
He described them, at length, dwelling longer than he probably realized on such details as the reinforced battlements, the well-equipped training yards, the degree to which the owners could protect themselves from assault.
Oh, yes. He was a soldier to the core,
no matter what role he had taken on for the moment.
"So, how do you see your life going forward?" she asked him when he'd stopped talking to take a final bite of potatoes. Do you think he'll go back to Gosen Hall, hire on as a guard somewhere? Do you think he'll settle down, look for a wife, raise children? He made that sound that seemed so characteristic of him, a snort or a laugh or a little grunt of disbelief.
Men like me don't usually start families.
Men like you, she repeated. He spread his hands, as if to indicate his body, as if to say, take a look.
Sometime mercenary, sometime vagabond, always moving on to something else, not the steady sort.
She watched him a moment. You seem pretty steady to me, she said at last. Not quite the drifter you pretend to be. He gave her a half-smile, somewhat mocking.
Good man in a fight, he said. Not so good with a baby.
She smiled back. Now you don't know that, she said, teasing. I'll bet you've never held an infant in your life. He laughed.
Well, that's true. I wouldn't even know what to do if somebody handed me one, all wrapped in blankets and probably squalling its eyes out. He thought for a moment, and then added, in a hard voice, though I'll tell you this much. If any woman ever did have a child of mine, I'd take care of that baby, with my own hands if I had to, or I'd pay somebody. I wouldn't just leave. I wouldn't just walk away, knowing some baby I had fathered, some child who was part of me, was roaming the world somewhere utterly abandoned.
Eleanor felt her throat tighten, and had to resist the urge to reach out and touch his arm. Not dressed like this, not in such a place. I think you'd make a charming father, she said, as lightly as she could. You'd be very fierce and protective if you had a daughter, and if you had a son, well, I'm guessing you'd teach him how to use a sword before he was even 2 years old.
Justin's face had lost its bleak edge.
I teach a girl the same thing, he told her. I know plenty of women I'd trust to take my back in a fight.
Someday you're going to think about something besides fighting, she said.
Sure, he agreed, when the world has changed so much that you don't even recognize it.
She was going to answer, but a noise made her turn in her chair. Justin's eyes had periodically gone to the door the whole time they'd been sitting here. He hadn't missed a single entrance or exit in the past hour. Now both of them watched the small party that entered in a manner that seemed oddly both bold and stealthy. There were five of them. Three looked like guards, and one was a small blonde woman who appeared faint with exhaustion. One was a strong-featured, dark-haired man whose impatient movements and brusque demand for food now made him appear the clear leader of the group. Eleanor didn't like his face. It was harsh, yet sensual, and she imagined that he got most of his pleasures from large and small acts of cruelty. A ridiculous thing to think about a total stranger. The proprietor hurried over and ushered the man and the woman to a table on the other side of the tap room. Their guards settled themselves nearby, their poses as watchful as Justin's, their backs to their master, their faces turned toward the door. None of them wore any insignia that marked them as being from a noble house, but Eleanor was betting that this was a Marlord or a Saramar, traveling in disguise. "What an interesting-looking man he is," she said in a low voice, turning her attention back to Justin. "What do you think he..." Her words trailed off as she realized Justin had not even heard her speaking. His hands were fists on the tabletop. His eyes had darkened with anger, colored by a good deal of surprise. So this was someone her new friend recognized, someone he obviously despised, and had not expected to see in Neft.
"Who is it, Justin?" she asked. "Who's that man? The lord whose service you left? Are you afraid he'll see you?"
Justin's grunt was half amused and half disgusted.
"It doesn't matter if he sees me. He doesn't know who I am."
"Then why do you hate him?"
That caught his attention. He finally looked at her.
"Only some of it's hate," he said. "Some of it's fear."
She felt her eyes grow wide.
"Why? Who is he?
What has he done to you?
He shook his head. He's never done anything to me, only to people I care about. He's dangerous, he's ambitious, and last I heard he'd been confined to his estates.